News Talk Tonight is on with your host, Jim Richards, on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Our colleague here at News Talk Tonight, our friend from CTV News, John Woodard, is going to be here in about 45 minutes' time. He sat down and talked to Omar Zamir and his wife. You'll hear that conversation, a good portion of it, in 45 minutes here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. Some of my questions, I was going to say outstanding questions, but I mean questions that I still have in a half an hour's time when we talk to a criminal lawyer. Perhaps we can address some of these things with Kareem Assad as well, who is a lawyer, journalist, satirist, and she is, if there's something happening, just look in the crowd. She is probably there. Kareem, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Cadell is with us as well. He's a counselor in Kamaraska, also former current columnist, diplomat, ministerial advisor, and broadcaster. Try, please, Andrew, next week to make your intro a little longer. Appreciate your time.
You forgot to mention I'm also the president of the Task Force on Linguistic Policy in Quebec.
Okay, all right. So there's that. All right, try to add something else to it.
One more thing.
All right, guys. So I was just talking before the break about Doug Ford, and I don't know how big of a conversation it is in Quebec. I'm guessing it's not. Although, when police seem to be on the stand and not telling the truth, I think that might be something that every jurisdiction, unfortunately, has experienced in this country. So when we talk about this story involving Omar Zamir, and 3 years ago, politicians, we had the then chief of police, we had Patrick Brown, who is the mayor of Brampton, we had the mayor of Toronto, who has since apologized, and we've had Doug Ford today asked if he's going to apologize. I wonder why, and you were a former advisor to politicians, Andrew. It seems sometimes like apologizing is seen as like a weakness. I think like if you can't apologize in the face of what people think is a black and white issue, I think that's weakness. If you can't admit now that there are new facts that I was wrong and I should not have done that, like it just, I think that is a form of weakness and not apologizing. Maybe you think, hey, well, the tough on crime or the police unions aren't going to like me if I apologize. You know what? Screw it. I mean, you can clearly see now that what you did was inappropriate.
Well, I was, a long time ago, I was an advisor to Bob Kaplan, who is the Solicitor General of Canada and therefore was the top cop in Canada. And we were always extremely careful to comment on issues that related to the police, especially given that the minister was in charge of the RCMP. But also, you know, this is a story that has, it's a Toronto story with national implications because police cannot publicly question the judicial system, and I think in this case, Myron Demke, as your police chief, did that, and that's one of the problems. John Tory questioned the issue of whether he should receive whether Omar Zamir should have received bail at the time, and you know, politicians, public figures, people involved in the justice system, you know, from the police right up to the Supreme Court, should have to recognize that for justice to be impartial, right from the beginning, right to the end, you have to be as strict as you possibly can in the comments that you make. And I think in this case, both of them were off base. And the apology, the nature of the apology, fine. But they never should have said those things in the first place.
Myron Demke, I guess, listen, I understand the tightrope that you have to play and probably have to play to the police union here, Karima. His apology today, I think, is going to lay to rest some people who national columnist Robin Urbach called on him to resign because, I mean, let's face it, when you say we expected a different outcome or we wanted a different outcome, well, that outcome of, you know, three allegedly lying police officers railroading a man into a first-degree murder conviction, I mean, you're okay with that? That looked really bad. He has since walked that back. But what about apologies from politicians who have made a mistake like this? Because clearly, I mean, listen, I know I'm rambling. Can we all concede that I'm rambling? But I just think that the idea that we would be The idea that, hey, an individual has killed a police officer is going to raise the ire with everybody. And rarely would you think, oh, that's probably a mistake. But in this case, it was.
I mean, I would echo the idea that politicians, public figures need to be very strict when it comes to commenting on matters before the court, especially where, like in the case of a bail decision, there is very limited information available. And so you're dealing mostly with speculation, often inflammatory comments, as we saw in this case, and that aren't grounded in any sort of fact. As far as the police chief goes, I don't think there's any putting the toothpaste back in that tube. And I believe that Canadians would be shocked if the extent to which officers who are professional witnesses, that is part and parcel of their job, they are meant to go and testify. We should be able to rely on their testimony as being honest and candid and forthright. If Canadians were aware of the extent to which this isn't that uncommon an issue, I think that that's something that merits looking into. I understand there's going to be an independent review of these particular officers, but in a bigger picture, we need to keep better track of those who aren't truthful on the stand, and that, in my view, is disqualifying.
Listen, I'm a coward. I say they allegedly lied. The defense lawyer yesterday said that they lied, and the head of the union said that's not fair to say that. But certainly, I mean, I would wonder, like, how the hell are you going to have a job as a police officer? And it wouldn't be the first time people have been accused of lying on the stand. It should be something that would eliminate you, disqualify you from being a police officer if you are supposed to be upholding the law and you are seen to be in contempt or perjuring yourself when you are on the stand. It would just to me, such a simple thing that should disqualify you from the job. But can I ask you a couple of things, Karima? And we're going to get into this in about 20 minutes time. Like, in that preliminary trial, can the judge just not say there's nothing here? You can't move forward? Or can the Crown just trump that and say we want to go anyway? It doesn't sound like it should have ended there. No.
Well, the initial where the comments, at least the politician's comments, came from, that was a bail hearing. So the bail hearing isn't.
I understand
looking
that.
At the
I'm sorry. I've moved on to why we even have a trial. Doesn't in the preliminary hearing the judge have the ability to say, "What are you doing? How could you move forward? There's nothing here."
Yeah,
that's a very good question, and in fact, the defense lawyer, Nader Hassan, asked exactly that question outside the courthouse. Why, you know, you'd have to ask the Crown why this made it to trial.
So the judge doesn't have the ability to throw it out if the Crown wants to proceed?
I don't know what happened in the preliminary hearing here. But I do know that this is a very live issue. There are suggestions that there's political motivation here, which doesn't seem far-fetched at all.
No, not at all. Okay. Yeah. If you want to address a couple of more things, Andrew, when we come back in a second, we can do that. We are doing our rundown right now. I'm Jim Richards. This is the iHeart Talk Radio Network. Karima Saad, lawyer and journalist. And Andrew Cadell is with us, former diplomat, ministerial advisor, broadcaster, current counselor, and something else I forgot.
Welcome back to News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Lots of questions still to be asked about this trial over the weekend in Toronto that concluded that Umar Zamir is not guilty. He spoke to our sister station, CTV Toronto, and we'll play that interview, not in its entirety, but as much, we'll play as much important stuff. The lawyer talks for about 6 minutes in this interview. interview, and we featured his thoughts yesterday. So we'll focus on the family by coming up in about 20 minutes time here on the iHeartTalk Radio Network. Happy to have lawyer Kareem Assad, journalist and satirist, with us. Also, Andrew Cadell is a counselor in Kamaraska, also is a columnist in the Hill Times, diplomat, ministerial advisor, and broadcaster. We were talking about whether or not this should have even made it to trial. In the pretrial process, the judge essentially said, you don't have a lot here. And I'm wondering why it couldn't have been ditched at that point. Did you have any thoughts there, Andrew, before we move along?
Well, first of all, I think that when you're going for a first-degree murder conviction, and of course you're in the criminal code, it says if a police officer is killed, it has to be first degree. Yeah. But the fact that this was a plainclothes officer made it kind of very, very difficult to determine whether it should have gone to first mm-hmm. degree. And I think when you go that high, now, as Kareem and I were talking about this offline, but the jury could have asked for manslaughter. But when you set that bar that high, it becomes that much more complicated. And I think that they would have been wise to really rethink. The Crown should have really rethought what they were doing and really dug into the evidence that they had at the time. And I think the judge at the time giving bail certainly was a sign that, well, this might not be as clear cut as it appeared to be.
I think if the defense doesn't want a publication ban, that should be able to trump anything that the Crown wants. But we'll get into that a little bit later on. Let's move along. I think over the weekend in Ottawa, and I think you were there, Kareem, but some of the chants that I will not get into because of how disgusting they were in Ottawa, to me, in my opinion, they were clearly anti-Semitic, celebrating the terrorist acts of October the 7th. You saw some people wear kafias there. So to me, that was hate. And I know the Ottawa police are investigating that. I don't really want to attach the two because I do believe that you can wear the kafia just because you're sympathetic to the plight of the people in Gaza. But what we've seen today, and I don't know why this isn't playing itself out in other places across this country, Queen's Park in Ontario, there was one MPP that decided to wear her kafiyeh. While there was an argument about why they didn't overturn a ban, Merritt Stiles is the leader of the NDP, and she is a little upset that Doug Ford hasn't whipped his caucus into overturning it.
We were certainly of the impression that it was still he was still supporting the motion, and, you know, with a weekend, several days to, I think, listen to more Ontarians and to hopefully, you know, connect with his team, we were hopeful that the Premier had gotten his team on side to do the right thing.
That is a hard ask when, you know, some of those MPPs are serving a very a riding that might have a high Jewish population. I think that's a difficult thing for them to do. I don't know that there's not a right answer here because I am sympathetic to a gray area where it is a cultural garment. And so what do you think the right move is here? I should also throw in that people are assuming that perhaps some people's opinion on this is contingent on a by-election where there's a heavy Muslim population. So, Kareema, do you want to go first?
Sure. I mean, you're right that you can't conflate the garment of the kafiyeh with protests happening on the streets, opinions being expressed. You know, they are two separate things. But having said that, I think it's fair to say that the kafiyeh is being politicized, yeah, and that people are wearing it who are Palestinian, who show solidarity for Palestinians, and there's no sort of there's no way to distinguish that or to have people do a test before they go into Queen's Park on their motives or right. So, you know, I think that in a practical sense, This is probably going to have like a Streisand effect, where the suppression or refusal to allow this in is going to, and has already, today there were protesters in Queen's Park who smuggled in their keffiyehs and then were escorted and trespassed out. So I think that, you know, on a practical level, the ban is going to only further politicize this issue.
I have to say, I've never heard Streisand effect. What does that mean?
Meaning, so it relates to a Barbra Streisand and her PR team trying to take down this unflattering photo, or it was her private residence or something. And in doing that, they drew so much more attention to it than it otherwise would have flown under the radar.
Okay.
I don't think anything's going to fly under the radar here, but I do think that the impact of this is only going to cause more of a storm.
Yeah, listen, Andrew, I don't know that anybody has the right. Anybody can do whatever the heck they want, but because somebody might be wearing a keffiyeh, there might be some person who is standing in solidarity with the people of Gaza versus what we heard in Ottawa, which sounded like wholeheartedly supporting the terrorist attacks and Hamas.
Well, the legislature sets its own rules, and that's how our democracy works in Canada. It used to be that going to Parliament, you had to wear a tie if you're going to sit in the visitors' gallery. That, of course, has gone, gone with the dinosaurs. But there are still rules as to dress in the legislatures of Canada and in Parliament, and the legislature sets its own rules. Now, because the keffiyeh has been politicized, and you know, we're looking back to Yasser Arafat as the head of the PLO, yep, would wear his all the time in public. There is that attachment, but I think at some point the legislature, because it can decide one way, it can always decide the other. But it's up to the members of the legislature to decide.
And Sarah Jama, who is the MPP who was wearing it today, I don't know that anybody. I don't know that it was addressed with her. I know that in the gallery it was addressed, especially when many of them started to make a lot of noise. I wanted to address one final thing, and it feels like a broken record, but Justin Trudeau here explaining why running for a fourth term is important.
The narrative that is out there is that everything that I've done and that we've done as a government for the past 8 years, whether it's fighting climate change, whether it's investing in partnerships and reconciliation with Indigenous peoples, whether it's promoting feminism and bringing forward a gender balanced cabinet, standing up for women's rights, standing up for minority rights, standing up for an economy that works for everyone. People are now saying the conservative argument out there is all those things is why life is difficult right now. And the actual fact is, particularly when you compare us to other countries around the world, all these things have made life better in meaningful ways, and it would be much worse.
People are feeling the affordability crisis. You might measure it against other countries in the West, and we might fare a little bit better. But I don't know, when you're the ruling government of the past 9 years and you're telling people everything is going really well, if that's a great look or anybody's going to buy it right now, especially if you're in the Indigenous communities, you're concerned about climate change and all that kind of stuff. Karima?
It's one thing to say that things are better, but if that doesn't match up with how people are experiencing their material reality, then that's actually, it's insulting.
I think a lot of people listening to that, hey, I know you can't afford your food, your house, and all that kind of stuff, but we're doing a good job. Okay, fine. Andrew, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Andrew Cadell is a counselor in Kamaraska, also a columnist for the Hill Times, diplomat, ministerial advisor, and broadcaster. Karima Saad is a lawyer, journalist, and satirist. I'm Jim Richards. Our deep dive into why isn't anybody talking about the prosecution of Umar Zamir and holding them accountable next year on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.